Hello and welcome to Ace Your Space, Declutter Your Life, Free Your Time, Reclaim Your Energy. I am so excited for today's guest. We have my friend Andrew Mellon here. Andrew, welcome.
Hey everybody, it's great to be with you, Leanne, and all the listeners. How y'all doing?
Well, they're going to be better once they hear you. I know that. So, all right, guys, I got to tell y'all a little bit about Andrew. Andrew is a keynote speaker, trainer, coach, and the best-selling author of Unstuff Your Life. He's often referred to as the most organized man in America. Now, he writes about simplifying your life everywhere from Real Simple to Oprah, Oprah's magazine. And you know what? His clients include people like American Express, Goldman Sachs, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the New York Mets baseball franchise, and the U.S. Departments of Education and Homeland Security. I think they probably could use your Andrew.
You know, we're not going to get into that.
I know. Right. He also works with SMEs, entrepreneurs, and solo entrepreneurs everywhere. Now, you know, you've probably seen Andrew because he's addressed audiences from TEDx to Dwell on Design and Blogger, Dad 2.0 and the Great British Business Show. Is that kind of like the baking show, but with business?
It's the largest trade show in the UK. It happens in London, I think, twice a year. I mean, it's a huge, huge conference of entrepreneurs, small business owners. It's a great conference. So.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. And you know what? You've also done Bucharest Tech Week, Sustainatopia.
Yeah.
You know, and since 1996, you have helped over 100,000 businesses and people to simplify their work and lives, freeing up valuable time for the things that actually matter, which often aren't even things at all. Exactly. I love that, Andrew. I love that. So my first question for you is, how did you become the most organized man in America?
Well, the media dubbed me that. So it's just, you know, I mean, it's a title that I didn't earn it. I wasn't in a competition. The media dubbed me the most organized man in America, and I figure I'll run with it for as long as I can.
I love that. Well, so how did you get started doing what you're doing?
In 1996, I was laid off from a theater in Seattle, Washington. And I came back east to co-produce an award ceremony at the Kennedy Center. One of our awardees was a Nobel Peace Prize winner based in New York City. So I went up to his office to get some photographs so that we could put together a slideshow when he collected his award at the ceremony. And in the process of going through the photographs, which were not well organized, things were missing, things were misfiled, mislabeled, things had been lent out and never returned. And after several hours in their storage room pulling things together, I assembled, you know, 16 or 20 images that we were going to use to make a slideshow for when he came up to collect his award. In the process of doing that, he and his wife sat me down and said, so, you know, what's your story? Who are you? What do you do? And would you be interested in organizing our photographs for us? And I said, oh my God, that would be a tremendous honor. I would love to organize your photographs for you. And so we made a plan for when I came back from DC, because I was moving back to New York. I had been in Seattle for 2 years running that theater. And my plan was to move back to the East Coast. So I figured I'm going to go back to New York. I'll have a job. I'll be working for this Nobel Peace Prize winner. And made a date the day before I was supposed to go to work in December. They called up, his assistant called up and said, something has come up. We need to reschedule for January. Made a date for January. Excellent. I picked up some freelance work as a copy editor and, you know, was piecing together an income and doing some freelance theater work. And January rolls around the day before I'm supposed to go to work. We get a phone call. Something's come up. We need to reschedule for February. I think you can see where this is going. Yeah. February rescheduled. March, they say, when we're ready to proceed, we'll get back in touch with you. So I never go to work for this family. But in 4 months, I tell every person I come across, I got this amazing gig. I'm going to create a comprehensive photographic archive for a Nobel Peace Prize winner. So then a friend of mine who I'm doing copy editing work with, she refers me to her accountant on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. I go to the accountant's office. The accountant, I mean, this is 1996. So, I mean, she's using TurboTax. She's using computer software, but she still has paper files on all of her clients. And they're a bit messy. And she has she specializes in clients who are performing artists who travel all over the world. Mm-hmm. So if you're any place, I think, I don't remember exactly what the law is or was then, but if you're any place for, let's say, more than 4 weeks and you earn money there, you have to declare it. So you're an out-of-state, non-resident, that you have to file a return in those jurisdictions. So she had to have quite a robust filing system because she needed those printed documents from every state revenue agency in every of the 50 states, not to mention overseas and lots of, an intense filing system, and she needed to be able to find things at her fingertips because she would see people during tax season. I mean, it was like a conveyor belt through her apartment. Okay. And, you know, her home office.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I built this robust filing system for her, and she started telling all of her clients. And so people would literally show up on my doorstep with a duffel bag full of receipts saying, I haven't filed my taxes in 5 years. I'm getting letters from the IRS. I am freaked out. I don't want to go to jail. Can you make sense out of this paperwork for me? So I would organize it. I'd put it into QuickBooks or Quick, and I'd give it back to the accountant. And the accountant would file their taxes. And these people were like, oh my God, you saved my life. You're amazing. They would tell all their friends, you'll never believe what this guy did for me. He saved my life. And their friends would inevitably say, I need somebody just like that. Who is he? How do I get a hold of him? And that was how my business began. This was never anything that I thought I was, I mean, I'm good at it, but it was nothing that I ever thought I was going to do. I thought I'd be working in the theater and film and television for the rest of my life. That was what I had trained to do and what I had done professionally for 20 years. It was just that this work kept coming and coming. And then I can remember very clearly standing on a stoop outside my apartment in Manhattan, thinking, I had just directed a play, which was successful, but the actors were kind of a pain in the ass. And I thought, like, God, I don't feel that hunger in my belly to be making plays right now and dealing with pissy, whiny actors. I'm really helping people change their lives here. I'm not only doing the work for them, but it became clear to me pretty early on that teaching them, you know, the give me a fish, teach me to fish kind of metaphor, that in working with them, I was helping them build their own organizational muscle, if you will. And that was, you know, where the idea to write the book came from, and this idea that I love teaching, I loved directing, and I love coaching. So it was a natural transition that instead of just being a tasker for hire for my clients, which I was excellent at, but wouldn't it be better to teach them to be independent and not so dependent on me? Because I do like to travel. I like, you know, I mean, I want to have a life, and I don't want to just always be responsive to people in need because they are disorganized and can't find what they're looking for. Being able to enable them to be self-sufficient would still create revenue for me. It would accomplish a bigger goal, which, I mean, all of the plays that I did, the reason that I was telling stories in a dark room in the first place was to prompt some sort of an epiphany and a catharsis in people so that they would shift how they were thinking about something or feeling about something or thinking and feeling about something and make different choices in their lives. So here I had this opportunity as a professional organizer to do it in the beginning on a much more micro level, right? It was one-to-one. And then when I started to do corporate trainings and do that, it was one-to-many, but still on a smaller scale. And then I got to be on bigger and bigger stages and on television and on radio. And so I started to be able to reach larger audiences, which is very comfortable for me. I'm familiar with standing on a stage and talking. So it's been the journey, and it's been such a, you know, I mean, it's humbling and such a privilege to be able to be the catalyst, because it's not about me. It's about you. It's about anybody who is struggling with organization and time management and is always feeling overwhelmed and like you don't have what you need at your fingertips. The ability to be able to prompt new behavior in you and give you the tools to make you self-sufficient. I mean, I can't imagine a better way to spend my time.
Right. You know what? I love that. And I also love how you really were able to connect the dots from what you did with the theater to, you know, the impact that you were having there to the same impact that you're having just on a little bit different stage. That's, yes. I love that. So I'm curious, have you always been an organized person?
So this is one of the things that I discovered. I was organized about the things that mattered to me. It's why I tie so much of my work to people's core values. And if you have not read Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, I encourage anybody who's watching this to read it. It's a very powerful book. Viktor Frankl was a Holocaust survivor. And he is a psychologist, was a psychologist, and he had written a book just before he was interred in a concentration camp. And so he had to rewrite the book when he got out because the manuscript was lost. What he discovered was that inside the concentration camps, regardless of how healthy somebody was, if they remained connected to their core values, they had a much higher survival rate. So rather robust, fit people, perhaps who had just been interred, would sometimes decline quite rapidly if they lost hope and lost a connection to what they valued. You know, people often say, like, if I couldn't live X way, my life wouldn't be worth living. And so, I mean, under these crazy intense circumstances, it's right. understandable that some people would lose all hope and feel disconnected from what mattered to them. But he recognized this pattern that people who disconnected from their values, rapid decline, people who might have been quite weak and physically not strong, but held fast to what mattered to them, had a much better survival rate. Mm-hmm. So this ties into, for me, the things that mattered to me were my baseball card collection, my matchbox car collection, and my chemistry set. Those were the things that mattered to me. So I was organized about them. And if you think about it, you can't really trade baseball cards if you don't know what you have, right? If you don't know you're missing Roger Maris or you're missing, you know, Mickey Lolich, then you can't really, you don't know how to get what you're missing to complete your collection. Mm-hmm. You just have a random box full of cards. So. Right. Part of the fun is knowing what you have. And so I discovered that I was organized about the things that mattered to me. I didn't care about clothing. So I would drop clothes on the bedroom floor, or, you know, if my mother yelled at me loud enough, I'd put them down the laundry chute, and then magically they would be back in a drawer in a day, folded and clean. Mm-hmm. It wasn't on my radar, so I didn't pay attention to it. And it just took care of itself. I mean, also I was a child and I had a parent who was, you know, taking some responsibility for that. But I discovered it, you know, as I did this work professionally, like people will find what matters to them if they can connect that dot, right? If they're disconnected and they're unconscious, if they're not, you know, mindfully aware, then everything just becomes a random object, and where your mobile phone is perhaps more important to you than where your living will is or your deed to your home. But once you can connect that with your values, it suddenly becomes much easier to pay attention to where you set your mobile phone down. You're not unconsciously just traveling through your home or your office, setting something on a counter and walking away because you're distracted and thinking about something else. Excuse me, you're actually bringing your attention to the moment that you're in.
Got it. I love that. and I was just thinking there, you know, where is my living will? No, actually, I do think I know where it is.
I hope so. You will as soon as we get off this call.
Exactly. All right. So the title of this online show is Ace Your Space, Declutter Your Life, Free Your Time, Reclaim Your Energy. Now, so what is Ace Your Space, or what does the title of the show mean to you?
Well, I believe that you should have a home that is as beautiful as you want it to be and as functional as it needs to be. So if your home is not supporting you in living the life that you want to live, first of all, this is the only moment when you actually have agency to affect anything, right? If you're living for the future, like sometimes some undefined future time, my life is going to be fabulous. Now it sucks, but someday it's going to be amazing and my space will be amazing. Well, if you're not taking deliberate steps to manifest that, unless the organizing fairies descend on your house in the middle of the night, like, you know, Cinderella's elves and sprites came and got her that gown and the shoes and the pumpkin and took her off to the ball, right? If you're expecting that to happen, I am, you know, sorry, not sorry to be the messenger that tells you that was a fairy tale and it's unlikely that's going to happen to you. Even if you win the lottery, still you'd have to hire somebody to come in and help you. It's not just magically going to happen. And, you know, those of us who grew up watching Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie got spoiled thinking, oh, there somebody does have the ability to exactly, you know, blink their nose, blink their eyes or twitch their nose and stuff's going to cut, cabinets are going to open up and stuff's going to fly around and everything's going to get put away. Not real, not real. Right. So if you want to ace your space, pay attention to the choices that you're making because all of the micro choices you make every day add up to the macro impact and the quality of your life. It's not a surprise. If you want to drop 20 pounds, you got to do something about it. You can't just wish about it and read magazines and read recipes, but never get up off the sofa and go walk around the block. And of course, you're not going to run a marathon the first day. And running a marathon that might even be the objective. Right. But if you want to drop 20 pounds, you need to figure out a system to drop 20 pounds from where you are to where you want to be. If you want to always be able to find your keys, your mobile phone, your wallet, your bag, whatever you're looking for in 30 seconds or less, you need to assign them a home. You need to use the organizational triangle. One home for everything, like with like, something in, something out. Those are the only three rules you need to know about getting and staying organized. And the first two are how you get organized. The third one is how you stay organized. So if everything has a home and all like objects are together, you'll be able to find anything in 30 seconds or less, guaranteed. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Now, where you keep your keys might be different from where I keep my keys, but your keys will have a home. My keys do have a home. They're either in our hand unlocking something or they're in their home. You can't not know where they are. So I'm using a double negative. I could also say you will always know where they are because they're literally in your hand or they're in their home. If you apply, and like with like just means all like objects live together, not most of them. So you don't start to play games with yourself. If you don't have enough room where you want to put your cooking utensils, then that's not the right home for the cooking utensils because they shouldn't be in three drawers. They should be in one drawer so that if you're trying to find a spatula, all of the spatulas are together as opposed to, well, I'm looking for the one spatula, but it's not in this drawer. I wonder where it could be. All of that is wasted time.
Yeah.
The average person will waste 1 year of their life looking for lost or misplaced items. And to be clear, nobody will spend a year of their life looking for their mobile phone or their wallet, regardless of how frugal you might be. I call this nickel and diming ourselves out of a year of our lives because it's 5 minutes here, it's 10 minutes there, and you will lie to yourself and say, I'm going to make up that lost time. You can't make up the time once it's been spent. So you have to be clear that when you set your phone down and you're not paying attention to where it is, you're not putting it in its home, you're setting yourself up for future failure and disappointment.
Wow, I love that. Guys, get out there and ace your space. You know, that
triangle. Exactly.
So you know what? I love the line that I read in your bio, you know, helping businesses and people to simplify their work and lives, freeing up valuable time for the things that actually matter, which often aren't things at all. Now, I think that's the true definition of clutter is the things that are in front of us that keep us from doing what we want in life.
Yes.
Now, why do you think people allow themselves to get so cluttered?
Well, I think it's unconsciousness. I mean, barring something like a hoarding disorder where, you know, which in the DSM-5 is classified as a form of depression, right? I mean, and then there's anxiety disorder and other things that are often bundled up with it. In the DSM-5, which is not necessarily the Bible, but it is, you know, it is a diagnostic tool. It says that hoarding is no longer should be considered part of obsessive compulsive disorder. It really belongs more to depression. Mm-hmm. So I think if you have untreated depression, I think if you are not paying attention, look, we go to school, we're taught how to add, we're taught how to write cursive, we're taught basic structures of grammar, but we're not really taught any life skills in public school. We're not taught how to balance a checkbook. We're not taught how to keep your things within grasp. We're not taught how to manage your money, let alone balance a checkbook, right? I mean, you know, we live in a society that encourages unsecured debt.
Yeah.
So if you're not, if you haven't learned yourself how to take care of yourself really in a high functioning way, you're basically just walking somewhat asleep through this experience. Mm-hmm. And we're not necessarily encouraged to dig that deep. And look, it's not, you don't have to become a Zen monk. You don't, what I'm talking about, the kind of awareness that I'm talking about is not renouncing belongings and, you know, going and being an ascetic and sitting on a mountaintop meditating for 23 hours a day. You can live in the world and still know where your things are and build a life of meaning and purpose and focus for yourself, where whatever you do, whether you're a stay-at-home parent or you're a CEO running a multi-billion dollar corporation, paying attention is paying attention. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I feel like people check out at right. various points of the day, of the week, of the month, of their life, and then are surprised when they come to and look around and go, oh my God, where did all this crap come from? How did this happen? Well, it didn't follow you home like a lost puppy. You brought it into your home. Deliberately, unconsciously perhaps, but you brought it home. You saw something at a tag sale or you saw something at a store. They were practically giving it away. They weren't giving it away. You did have to give them some money. Or maybe they were giving it away and you picked it up on FreeCycle and you had a story about this is someday going to be useful to me. But really, if we return back to our core values, how do you want to spend your day? How do you want to spend your week? How do you want to spend your life? Once you know what is important to you, it becomes very easy to distinguish all of the things that are not supporting that, that can easily be let go of, that just are, as you said, Leanne, just the stuff, the obstacles that are between us and I'll call it happiness, right?
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Well, you know, what comes to mind when you just answered that question is like a lack of intentionality on the part of so many people. Yes. And maybe it's because they, you know, they're just used to running scripts as they, you know, going through life on automatic or something like that. But yeah, if people just took a few minutes to bring some intentionality into how they go through life, it would make a huge difference.
Of course, yeah. And I think there is, we come into the world how we come into the world. We're raised in whatever family structure we're raised in or, you know, or not in a family structure. We reach adulthood as we reach adulthood with whatever we manage to pick up, right? Whatever tools and skills we manage to pick up if we have a strong enough will to survive. Mm-hmm. And then consciousness happens and you start to either pay attention or you don't pay attention. And there are so many factors at play, I think, that there's no one reason why people might have clutter around. And on some level, the why doesn't really matter. It really begins today when you draw a line in the sand and say, from today forward, I'm going to make different choices. Right. So I think that first of all, I'm not a psychologist, although I, you know, have a background in psychology and I've certainly, you know, as a lay therapist, yeah. I have deep conversations with many of my clients. Setting that aside, I think the point is how you got here doesn't really matter. Right. Because as Maya Angelou says, when you know better, you do better. So if we just assume that whatever happened, happened, you arrived here, you're watching this video from this point forward, you may do and can do anything you want to. If you're willing to put in the time and the effort, you can transform anything. We've seen it happen over and over again. You don't have to be wealthy to do it. You don't have to have, you don't even have to have all of your senses. If you have any challenges or disabilities, you can still get organized. Those might be challenges, but they are not, they do not make anything impossible. Because we see people in all different circumstances address their circumstances and shift them to manifest what they want. So right. I'm a firm believer that there are no barriers to organization and a life of deep meaning and value, whatever that means to you, with clear access to whatever it is that you want to spend your time doing.
Right. I love that. That's so well said. So, you know, Andrew, it kind of seems like decluttering is having a little bit of a moment now. We've got, sure. You know, Marie Kondo and her show. We've got all those horror shows on the cable TV. And now a lot of people have been talking about all this COVID decluttering. Now with you and what you do with people, what makes you different? What makes you kind of stand out in what you're doing?
Well, I would say two fundamental things that distinguish me from our colleagues is that I put the focus on people and not on the stuff. I think Marie Kondo's amazing, and I think she still fetishizes objects and encourages people to have a stronger relationship with things than I am advocating. Because in the end, right? I mean, whether you're Joe Schmo or Susie Schmo or you're King Tut, right? And they build a pyramid and put all your stuff in it. When you're gone, you're gone. So you can't take it with you, regardless of how neatly you folded it or how deeply you feel connected to it. You're going to leave this experience the way you came in, naked and alone. Not like in a sad, naked and alone way, but the reality is you're not leaving with your pockets full of things. So in my experience, too much focus is placed on the objects, and whether the objects came again from Neiman Marcus or the Goodwill doesn't matter. You are the problem. How you relate to stuff and the stories you tell yourself are the problem, not the stuff. The stuff is inanimate. It has the only story it has is the story you've attached to it, right? I mean, American Girl dolls can't come with a written story. The doll itself was made in a factory. It doesn't have a story. It was sold to you with a story. So everything, any object that you can scan your space right now in and look at it, any story that's attached to that object, you brought to it, or you inherited it with the object when you got it from somebody else. In and of itself, the object is inanimate, it's completely neutral, doesn't want you to not have a good life, isn't rooting for you to have a good life. When you put your mobile phone in the drawer at the end of the night, you might be saying, God, I love my new iPhone 11. Your iPhone 11 is not saying, God, I love Leanne. The way she caresses me when she picks me up is amazing. I'm so lucky that Leanne purchased me at the Apple store instead of anybody else. If you believe any version of that, like your objects love you the way you love them, you're wrong. You're just wrong. The objects do not care about you. So you are the problem, not the stuff. That's the first thing. And the other thing is that so many of our colleagues focus on getting organized, which if you drink a pot of coffee or drink three Diet Cokes, you could get organized in a weekend. It's staying organized that is the problem. And that's, again, where we disconnect and no longer pay attention, right? I mean, we've got the big push, like, I'm just going to clean all this crap up. I'm going to make sense out of all of it. Excellent. I'm done. It's finished. Yay for me. And then you go back to your same old behavior. Nothing about you has changed. So you're not going to put things back where you put them in your burst of energy. You're going to start leaving crap on your kitchen counter again, or on the floor next to your bed, or on your coffee table, or on your dining room table, or in the trunk of your car, or on the front seat of your car, or in your backpack or your bag, wherever. You're not going to put it back in its home. Remember, just three rules: one home for everything, like with like, something in, something out. Super easy to maintain. So if you want to stay organized, once everything's in its home and all like objects are together, it's easy to stay organized. If when something comes in, something goes out, you'd have no business accumulating things unless in your core values, consumption was one of your core values. And if that wasn't one of your core values, if generosity was, or love was, or financial stability was, it has nothing to do with accumulating inanimate objects. So, and if anybody tries to tell you that there is a number of objects you're allowed to have, they're lying to you. No professional organizer knows what you should have in your home. Your space is doing an amazing job communicating that to you, albeit quietly. So if you can't fit everything into your closet, you either need a bigger closet or less things. The math is super simple. You can complicate it with all kinds of narrative, but the math is very simple. Fewer objects, more space. It can only be one of two things. So if you want to stay organized and you have 150 pairs of shoes, I'm not going to tell you that's too many pairs of shoes if there's room for them. What I will tell you is if 150 is what you decided on, the 151st pair must be replacing one of the first 150. Because particularly if you have a story that says, I don't have enough time to do the things that matter to me, then what are you doing shopping? Because that can't possibly be of more importance than showing up on time for your kid's soccer game or baking cookies for the church social or curing cancer in a laboratory, if that's what you do, or taking a trip around the world with somebody you love. Right? I mean, or volunteering down the block at the soup kitchen, whatever it is, however you want to spend your time, chances are it had nothing to do with shopping. Yeah. So to sum it all up, I would say that the two ways that I distinguish myself from my colleagues is I put the focus on the people, not on the objects, and I focus on staying organized, not getting organized, because I think really anybody can get organized. The key is staying organized.
You know what? I love that. And I think you're so right. It's like, you can clean up something in a weekend with enough coffee. and until you have that mindset shift, it's going to go right back to the way it was. So how do you have people how would you advise someone to affect that mindset shift to have that happen?
So, the first thing is to bring awareness to your behavior, mm-hmm. right? In a non-judgmental, compassionate way. So imagine you were talking to somebody you loved and cared for and wanted to be happy and safe. Instead of talking garbage to yourself, like you might be doing, you know, unconsciously to yourself. You would never say the things to somebody else that you might say to yourself about how stupid you are or why you can't, you know, whatever that is, whatever your version of that inner dialogue is mm-hmm. that tells you that you're a hot mess and somehow you're broken. You're not broken. Every person was born organized. So you didn't not get the organizing gene. Yeah. So I would say that starting to recognize the average adult tells 200 lies a day. Two-thirds of them are never spoken. A third of them might come out of your mouth, but two-thirds of them are just things that we tell ourselves. So the first thing is to really bring some attention to that and start to recognize, I just fabricate stuff all day. Don't mean to, doesn't mean I'm a bad person, just means I'm unconscious. So bringing some awareness to your choices and your behavior is the first thing. And it really just, look, so many of the people that I've taught and work with tell me that they hear my voice in their head now, like, well, what would Andrew say? He would say, put that back in its home, right? Don't set it down on the counter. Don't just drop it and keep walking. Take the same, it's the same math also. That's one of your 200 lies is, right? It'll take less time to put it away later. It actually will take more time to put it away later because if we refer back to Newton's second law of entropy, a body in motion tends to stay in motion, a body at rest tends to stay at rest. It will actually take more energy for you to start up again and go put something away than it would have if you would have just stayed in motion and put it away in the moment. But again, we like to play games with the math in our head. It's all garbage. It's all just 200 lies. So I would say bring your attention to your choices and your behavior in this moment. Make micro adjustments, and those will impact over time. You'll get the results that you're looking for. Don't set yourself up for, you know, like, I'm going to change my entire life in the next 12 seconds. That is a recipe for disaster and failure. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is, like, I'm going to use the triangle. I'm going to assign a home for my keys, my wallet, my bag, and my cell phone. Right? Like, that's it. Just start small and build momentum on there. The clutter didn't accumulate overnight. It's not going to go away overnight. But it will go away if you change your behavior and your relationship with stuff.
You know, and I like that. And you actually just answered the question I was going to ask. I mean, it's like, where do you start? Like, start with some of those important things that you're having trouble with. And then you build a little bit from there each day or each whatever. So
yeah, I think you need a system. Mm-hmm. And the system is simple, right? The system again is assigning everything a home, putting like objects with like objects. So often people get caught up again in story and in their feelings and tend to get dramatic about their circumstances, and it just doesn't serve. So you want to settle into, how do I want to live my life? Mm-hmm. How do I build a space that supports me in doing the things that I want to do? You want to assign those homes. You want to group like objects with like objects. And I tell people, you can start one of two. I mean, that's a fundamental. But then if you're thinking about how do you start to attack the clutter, you can either go for a quick win, which is to probably go across all the surfaces in your home and remove clutter, things that need to be recycled or thrown in the garbage. It's an easy, quick win, not particularly large or dramatic, but a quick win. And if you're feeling at all tenuous or overwhelmed, easy way to begin. If you're feeling a little more inspired and motivated and thinking, no, I want to go deep, then I would say go to the place where you experience the most pain and discomfort in your home. Could be the sad, scary corner in the basement, could be your closet, could be your kitchen cabinets or your kitchen counters, wherever it is that you feel the most space compacted and tension, go there because you'll get a big win. And so if you're feeling fierce, go for the big win. If you're feeling puny, go for the quick win. You're gonna end up, you'll meet in the middle wherever you start, but set yourself up for a success. Failure breeds failure. Success breeds success. If the last time you tried to do something, you were unsuccessful, you're already feeling beat up the next time you attempt it. It's much better to build momentum on successes, because then the next time you try to do it, you're telling yourself, oh my God, I'm on fire. I didn't think I was going to be able to do this at all. Look at me. I'm crushing it. I want to do more. So we want to activate that motivating source inside of you.
You know what? And that is such a good idea. And I mean, and I think, like, I would even go in further. It's like, keep up with those wins. Like, you know, make a list of those wins. Make a list of, like, I decluttered that. And if you think you can't do it, go look at what you've done and say, oh, I've done those things. Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah. I love that. Okay. I've got a couple of questions for you.
Sure.
What's a movie you can practically quote from start to finish?
Oh,
I would imagine for you, there might be a few of those.
You know, I don't know if I could quote them from start to finish, but I will tell you that a few of my favorite movies are Blade Runner, Sunset Boulevard, and Postcards from the Edge.
Oh yeah, those were good ones.
Yeah.
Now, when's the last time you did something for the first time?
Well, I moved to Florida 3 months ago. That was the first time I've lived in Florida. I mean, what are we talking about?
Yeah, like, yeah, that's it.
I played
bingo. I did bingo the other night.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think I may have done it as a child, but I don't remember it. So like that doesn't count. So
I would say that, I mean, that's the newest thing that I've done. Mm-hmm. I've never lived in Florida. I've never lived in the South. I lived in Washington, D.C., which is south of the Mason-Dixon line. But this was the first time that I've ever, you know, and I didn't plan to move here. I came down. I thought I was going to be spending the winter away from New York because I didn't want to spend any more winters up north. Mm-hmm. And then COVID hit. And so I just ended up staying. So.
Okay. I love that. That's great. So I think you have a gift for the audience.
I do. We have actually two gifts. We have my photo do's and don'ts that we're going to give you. And I think we're also giving you the should it stay or should it go guide, which is the ultimate guide to what documents to keep and for how long. So if you've ever wondered, like, should I keep this? How long should I keep this? Now, there's one disclaimer, which is I'm not your accountant and I'm not your attorney. So you should definitely check with them as well. But as a rule, this guide is the ultimate guide that will tell you from 1 month to the rest of your life the documents you should hold on to. And then the photo do or don't book. Guidebook will tell you exactly how to protect your photographs, how to organize them, whether they're digital or analog print photographs. It's a great handy guide, and folks seem to really love it.
Oh, you know what? Those are going to be great. I know that people are going to absolutely love those. So before we finish up the interview, do you have one more tip that you can tell the audience about one actionable thing they can do to really declutter their life?
Well, I would say do the core value exercises. And you know what? I'll throw that in. I'll make that available as well. I'll give that to you, Leanne, as well, so that everybody can download that. And I would say, whether you live alone or you share space with other people, do the core value, set a timer for 25 minutes. That's all you need. Mm-hmm. Do the core value exercises. If you have a story running back here that says, oh, Andrew, I know it's important to me. My family's the most important thing to me. Then you have to ask yourself, have you ever been late showing up to do anything with your family? Because in those moments, you're actually out of integrity, mm-hmm. right? If your family was the most important thing, you would always be on time. Mm-hmm. So, and again, no judgment there, but just let's be clear that a vague notion of what's important to you is completely different than a crystal clear notion of what is important to you. So I encourage you, do the core value exercises. If you share space with anybody, after you've done yours and they've done theirs, do them together for the family or for the unit. Mm-hmm. What you will discover, particularly this comes up in stuff discordant couples all the time. Like if you've got a partner and you tell them, I love you. Don't empty the dishwasher ever. I can never find anything when you put stuff away. Load it. I love it when you load it. Don't empty it, right? They're not doing it to trip you up. They think that they're putting things away where they would look for them. Now, you haven't collaborated on the homes for everything. You have your notion, they have their notion. If you did the value exercises, you would suddenly discover why they think that the plastic spatula belongs with the plastic Tupperware because it's plastic, instead of you thinking the plastic spatula belongs with the cooking utensils because it's a cooking utensil, and Tupperware belongs with storage containers because it's about storage. It's an understandable difference of opinion once you understand how they look at the world. But if you just assume that everybody views things the way you view things, you're just going to stay in conflict. And believe me, if you share space with anybody, and you know this firsthand, nobody's going to comply with your instructions about where you think things should live.
Right.
Even your children will resist. If it's a collaborative effort and you say, hey, I think there are some ways that we could make our space much better if we all collaborated on where things lived. It might not be the best way to spend a weekend, but I promise you, if we just spend one weekend doing this, we will be able to find anything we're looking for, and we'll never have another fight about where something is. So that feels like a good enough win to suck it up for a weekend of going through this process. And the other thing is that this work can be fun. I mean, once you start to recognize, and if you can recognize your foibles and somebody else's foibles with an open heart and some humor, you'll actually discover that your ability to care for each other and support each other and build a home that nurtures and supports you is much more aligned than you think it is. When you're just thinking, oh my God, why does this keep ending up in this drawer? This is the stupidest. This would be the last place I would look for this. Of course, but it's the first place they would look for it. So much better to have the conversation, find the compromise. Maybe it's a drawer between the two drawers. And that, we move all the things that are like together into that new drawer. And now everybody can find them. It's much less fraught than many people think it is. I think getting organized and staying organized is simple. This is not rocket science that we're talking about. This is not quantum physics. It's mm-hmm. one home for everything and like with like. You can totally do it.
Got it. I love that. You know what? Thank you so much, Andrew. I have had such a great time talking to you today.
Oh, thanks. It's been great being with you, Leanne, and everybody.
This has been such a fun interview. I know that the audience is going to love this. And you know, audience, what I want you guys to do is to make sure you look in your emails tomorrow. We've got another couple of great Ace Your Space interviews coming up. And until then, I will see you next time. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.